Welcome to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. We want to thank you for joining us this Sunday afternoon. And Sheena, it is so good to have you back after having you off for a couple of weeks and being a little under the weather.
I know, man. The flu takes no prisoners at all. I mean, it is legit. And which I will say the only symptoms that I had was sneezing. So I didn't have the fever or chills or anything else. I was still, by, I guess, my husband's standards and my coworker standards, contagious. So a lot of people did not want to be around me.
Did you wear the little mask around your house?
I did. Well, not at my house, but at work. Uh-huh. Well, the short period of time they let me be there whenever I got a flu positive test, I pretended like I was a Mortal Kombat character. It was really great. Yeah. Just having the little mask on there. But yeah, there's something a little freaky about, you know, walking around with a mask. It's like a universal sign of either I'm trying not to get sick or I am infested.
So. Or I am going into or out of surgery. So you should have worn scrubs too.
I know.
At your place of business, that would have been perfect. It would have been pretty cool. Did you draw anything on your mask, like a little mouth with some missing teeth?
I did not. Those are pretty disposable. And I was just worried it was going to disintegrate with a Sharpie. So I just didn't. I kept it simple. The dog was kind of scared of me with the mask. I didn't want to complicate it by some drawings. Yeah. You just didn't know what was going on. But you have not been plagued with the flu yet.
Knock on wood. And yes. So.
Because you
comparing side by side my diet versus your diet, like, as we usually do.
Yes.
And the dependent variable.
Yes.
Being the flu.
Yes.
I'm just saying that your diet of high in fruits and vegetables, mine where I go dairy, meats, and potatoes.
But did you not communicate with me last week that you had bronchitis and pneumonia and you were
It's not the flu. There's a difference.
Okay.
There's a difference.
Okay.
Right?
There is,
Did they make me come to work with a mask on?
Did you even go to work?
No, that's a good point.
Okay.
You know me too well.
I know. Okay.
I felt bad, Sheena.
I know. I know. I'm teasing. I shouldn't even tease about that. But we've got a good show this afternoon, man.
We do. And, when you brought this idea up, I thought it was really cool. And you know what's really interesting, making the transition from what we were just talking about?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I remember from some epidemiology classes is like, and it's just been, I say just 100 years ago, but 100 years ago, almost exactly 100 years ago, 1917, 1918, the leading cause of death in the United States was, you have a clue what it is?
I don't.
The flu.
Really?
Yeah. They went through a time period there where acute disease killed a lot of people, and they couldn't deal with the flu very well. Then they got it under control.
Right.
So, and you see that, I mean, it's almost 100 years later, and we're dealing with the same thing. I mean, it's not going to be the leading cause of death in the United States, obviously, but it's such a big outbreak this year.
No, and I think, it's just it adds a great conversation piece for people to have self-care and to just be aware of those symptoms and know if they're in a high-risk group. And, of course, we're talking about flu as an acute condition. And, with our show this afternoon, we'll be kind of going on the other end of the spectrum with really talking about how we manage our chronic conditions and even adding on top of that as a college student.
Right. And it's what's really unique about what we're going to do today is when we think about chronic conditions, we normally think about heart disease and cancer as, top couple of ones that are out there as leading causes of death. And we usually think about it in association with elderly people because, it's the nature of chronic disease. It takes a little while for it to develop. It's not as common that you see chronic disease in younger students and the complications that go along with that.
Right.
So I think what we have today is, I've been excited about it. It's something I've told a couple of people we're going to talk about it today, and it's just a great topic.
I know. And, it's such an important topic that this is the first time I think we've ever had three guests.
Yeah,
so
I know.
so we have a star-studded show, you guys. We've got some, great conversations that are going to be coming up. But you got to stick with us this afternoon. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John, and we will catch you after the break.
The 90.7 The Capstone!
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. I want to thank you for joining us after the break. We talked a little bit before the break about a couple of our guests that are on with us right now. And we prior to the break, we were talking, Sheena, about, you know, the difference between acute and chronic disease. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, just real quickly, you know, talk about the difference between those. Like, for usually when we talk about young people, for the most, I would say for the most part, they usually have to deal with acute disease.
Right, right. You know, that whether, you know, like we had been talking about with the flu or, you know, common cold or a virus or anything else. And then, of course, when we were talking about more chronic conditions, those that would have to be managed long term. So if you think of the word chronic, so like you were saying, John, that could be heart disease, that could be hypertension. You know, one of the ones that we're going to be talking about today is diabetes. But, you know, I would say in my field, especially related to diet, oftentimes we're automatically thinking about type 2. Type 1 right. isn't something that is brought up as often, or at least not with the past clientele that I've seen. So
right. And you see this on a pretty regular basis. How prevalent would you say it is on campus?
I would say, you know, and it was funny because before the show, I was trying to look up the college statistics, but I would say over the course of the almost 9 years mm-hmm. that I've been here, I've had at least 100 students that have had,
really?
That have come in okay. with diabetes related issues.
So on average about 10 a year for mm-hmm. you, yeah. something like that. Wow.
Yeah, and that's just people that are actively
coming to see me.
Right,
yes.
uh-huh. And so there could be so many more
right.
That may be doing self-management and might be utilizing the services of another dietitian or don't need that, so yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, speaking of diabetes and diabetes care, a couple of friends of yours
yes.
here with us today.
Yes, yes,
us,
yes.
Alicia Gilbert and Brian Deal. Thank you guys for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, sir. Thank
yeah.
you.
And actually, so if you guys would, we'll, and for our listeners that don't know, we are recording at a lovely round table so we can all make eye contact with each other and everything else. And so sometimes it gets fun kind of figuring out like who's going to talk next. But I'm going to throw y'all a bone and say, Alicia, will you introduce yourself first? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
So my name is Alicia Gilbert. I'm from Arab, Alabama. I'm a senior here at UA studying food and nutrition. So I've actually had the opportunity to intern with Sheena over the past couple of weeks, which have been great. So like they were talking about, I actually have type 1 diabetes, and I was first diagnosed at the age of 9. So I'm 21 now, so it's almost like a part of my life now because it's 12 years later.
Sure, so. Sure. And then Brian, how about you?
Well, my name is Brian Deal. I'm actually from Double Springs, Alabama. I'm also technically a senior. This is my first year being at UA. I've transferred from different colleges the past mm-hmm. couple of years. But I've actually had type 1 diabetes since I was 7, so I can relate a lot to Alicia. It's basically part of your life. I've had it for going on 15 years in January, 15 mm-hmm. or 16 years. I'm 21, about to turn 22
yeah.
this month. So.
Yeah. Well, we just appreciate both of you guys being on here, just getting to talk about your experiences.
Yeah. Alicia, let me ask you first, what would you say over the course of those years that you've been dealing with this, what would you say are some of the most difficult? I mean, have you had, you know, did you make the transition into what you had to deal with easy once you were diagnosed, or was it a lot of a big learning curve on your part?
So I definitely think that I had the advantage of being a little bit younger when I got diagnosed. Mm-hmm. Some of my friends that have type 1 diabetes were diagnosed much later on in life, so they already had some eating habits that were well established that they had to adjust. Mm-hmm. So I still remember being diagnosed because, like I said, I was 9, so I have memories of being in the hospital. I was there for 2 weeks when I was first diagnosed. My blood sugar was 750, so wow. It was just crazy. But I worked with the doctors a lot and the nurses there and obviously the dietitian. And it was really just a learning thing. And the best part I thought about being diagnosed when I was younger is that it was more of a family approach. I feel like the older you get, the more responsibility that you get put on as just an individual. But getting to do that alongside my parents helping me out definitely
right.
made it easier.
Right. That was what I, one of the things that I was getting at was, you know, as far as being at home and being young, you know, you have your parents to take care of you. Mm-hmm. But it had never occurred to me that you hadn't developed eating habits. That's mm-hmm. huge. I guess, Brian, would you say that you it was kind of similar for you, or
It was very similar. Like, when I first found out I was diagnosed, I was actually after a basketball game when I was seven. Mm-hmm. And I drunk six Mountain Dew 20-ounce glasses at the restaurant and peed six times in the next 30 minutes. So my mom was kind of like, yeah, we better take you home and get this ketone strip that the doctor had previously gave her the year before. And oh, when she checked, it was black on the ketone strip. Yeah. So that was like off the charts. So she rushed me to Jasper, the local one, said, hey, it's too high. It's almost 1,000. We got to send him to Children's over at UAB in Birmingham.
Yeah.
And so I spent the next 2 weeks kind of like Alicia did, learning how to like eat better and learning how to take shots. My mom, it killed her because I would cry because I was a big baby about shots. And every time they'd have to give me a shot, I'd cry and she'd feel terrible. So she'd cry and my mom and dad had to learn stuff like that. Yeah. But it kind of is a learning curve. You got to learn to eat better and learn to take shots and get used to like pricking your finger, taking shots, you know, learning the pain through it. And
sure.
Now it's to a point that I just check my blood and it's not anything.
Yeah. Well, you know, and kind of just thinking about that transition through the life cycle, do you feel like whether it was junior high or high school where there was more self-management that happened for you guys? You know, I think in my practice, I have a lot of variability in how involved the parents are with that care. And then, of course, you know, once you come to college, you're completely independent. But I just didn't know how hands-on or off your families were when, say, in high school. Like, Alicia, how was it for you?
So I definitely remember my parents helping me out more so in junior high than high school. So they would help me with calculating dosages of insulin, but they really wanted me to be independent with it because they knew at some point, you know, that I would be leaving the house and going on to college or whatnot. So they wanted me to be independent with it. So in high school, I had already ingrained the habits of doing everything myself. I did all of my insulin dosages. I did all of my carb counting. My mom was obviously there to kind of assist me. And if she needed to call the doctor and figure out a dose adjustment, she would do that for me from time to time. But other than that, I was totally independent. And now being in college, I'm definitely grateful that she wanted me to be able to do these things for myself, and she was more hands-off about it, because I definitely think that made the transition of doing everything on my own in college much easier.
That's awesome. And Brian, would you say your experience was similar, different?
It was a lot similar. Like, I started I had to learn kind of early how to do my dosages and stuff. I actually went to different camps here in Alabama, to Camp Sol Harris. It's actually a camp dedicated for diabetic kids. Yeah. It kind of like teaches you into it. The first time I ever went was being sponsored by my doctor. He wanted me to learn a little bit the first year I had it. And so I had to get on a pump because I was going through like puberty changes when I was a teenager and it was kind of wacky. So I've had to learn how to change a pump side, get my own shot at it pretty early. Plus I would go to my friends' houses a lot, so I had to learn to take my own shot because, you know, mom and dad can't hold your hand while you're at your
coming to the sleepover, you know.
Exactly. And so I had to learn probably like in junior high, maybe high school, especially being able to drive and out places yourself with your friends. Like, you got to learn how to take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you'll be on the side of the road and your friends freaking out. They know what to do. But in that moment, they're like, oh, crap, what are we supposed to do besides call 911? So
you had
to learn how to take care of yourself pretty early.
Yeah. Well,
that's scary at a young age, having to learn to deal with that, I bet.
Yeah.
Both you guys. I was watching a movie the other day where I don't know, it's a movie, okay? I know I always go on, but it's a husband and wife were, and she was type 1 diabetic, and she was in an elevator, and the elevator broke down.
Oh, no.
And there was nothing she could do. Mm-hmm. So, completely helpless.
No, I just, you know, I guess hearing your experiences, I think just can be so impactful for our listeners. And I know, you know, we've got to take a break in a second, but I'd love for us to chat more about what your experience is like now. And, you know, even thinking about that transition to college and, you know, what you would even share as wisdom to incoming students that, you know, have some worries about managing a chronic condition as they transition onto campus. But I'm going to stop rambling, y'all, and let us take a break. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hi, I'm Michael Kasky. I'm a civil engineering major, and you're listening to 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied on 90.7 The Capstone this Sunday afternoon. You're here with John and Sheena, and we are talking with a couple of our guests, Alicia Gilbert and Brian Deal, a couple of students who learned at an early, relatively early age that they got diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and learned to manage their conditions. But we were talking before the break about how at such an early age, you know, they were kind of forced, for lack of a better word, into learning how to take care of themselves and their condition and do it on their own. I think it's good that you guys both had parents and physicians and people that were willing to work with you and kind of not baby you too much, I guess might be the best way to look at it. As a parent, I feel like I would want to do everything, you know, and do everything I could to take care of my kid. But I guess probably one of the best things I could do for you is teach you how to do it on your own. That being said, moving to college, moving off on your own, where you really are on your own, Alicia, what would you say it was the biggest transition related to your diabetes as far as moving on to college?
I think the most difficult thing was just trying to hone in on a meal schedule for myself, because when I was living at home, my mom was the one that primarily cooked all the meals. So, and I was responsible for taking my lunch to school, but we had a schedule at school, and then I would come home and I would have dinner ready. So, in college, I took advantage of the meal plan like most students do, but there's so much more freedom as far as the schedule of things. And so one thing that I think was difficult as a freshman was just trying to be responsible in making sure that I was eating every couple of hours to manage my blood sugar, because classes are so much different in college than they were in high school, in that one day you may have class at a certain time, the next day you may have a totally different schedule. And even things like timing of meals affects your blood sugar in a significant way.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, what about you, Brian? Would you say it was similar type things when you made the transition, or did you have like different things that you had to consider?
Yeah, mainly it was a lot of a diet. Like, I'd learned to eat a little bit better than what I was doing in high school, because your parents kind of get on to you. They're like, hey, right, you shouldn't be eating that. And then you have to consciously think about that. Like, okay, I have to buy this type of food. Okay, I have to eat it this time. Or, you know, you have to watch my blood sugar, how this affects my blood sugar. You kind of have to learn all that. And also acquiring your medicine. See, I've probably been working ever since I got into college. So, like, I come from a kind of a like lower class, like poor family. So like I had to start buying my own medicine after a while. And so you kind of have to learn to keep up with your supplies, buy Lancets, all that kind of stuff, and like keep up with kind of like an inventory of all your stuff. So I think those two main things are the biggest transitions, and like sleep and learning how to manage your time and scheduling and all that.
Right. Well, one thing that this is kind of a random question, but it just occurred to me, you know, considering the fact that the two of you are nutrition majors, did your diabetes at all impact you going into the nutrition profession or considering it? And, you know, does having that nutrition knowledge, do you feel like that's helped with your own self-care and management of your conditions? Like, I'll let you go first, Alicia.
I definitely think that I had an interest in nutrition related to my diabetes, just because I was always thinking about nutrition. You can't just grow up with type 1 diabetes and never think about the food that you're putting into your body. Mm-hmm. But I definitely knew that I didn't want to work with people with diabetes. It was just a little bit too much of that for me. But I would say just being interested in nutrition was in part related to having diabetes, but also just related to an interest in exercise and sports and things like that.
Sure. Awesome. How about for you, Brian?
Yeah, it definitely had an influence on me picking the major. I've always been the type that wanted to help people. Like, I was a pre-PT student before I transferred here to UA and changed my major to food and nutrition. And so I kind of wanted to help people on like a cellular level, because even in my own experience, I actually went vegan this past February last year. Mm-hmm. And that has been the most incredible change to my like diabetes management, all that. I was actually on a, not many people know this, but like a carb ratio. So you take, if you eat 6 carbs, you take a unit of insulin. Mm-hmm. I was currently on that. That's pretty high dose for most diabetics. And when I got on that type of diet, like my carb ratio went all the way to 12. It cut in half.
Oh, wow.
Just a month into the diet. And so I seen how big and impactful diet is to your life and even to like chronic conditions like we have.
Right.
And so that just made me even more interested in how I can help others through my knowledge in nutrition.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. And I know John was kind of cringing when he heard the word vegan because his meat lover. Now I'm a meat lover too, but I appreciate my veggies for sure. So. Yeah. And I know, you know, well, one thing too, that we had mentioned during the break that we wanted to ask about, do you feel like there were any services on campus or in the community that were, essential to, you know, helping you be successful? I know you were talking about summer camps, Brian, Alicia, did you feel like there were any resources, whether it was in your college experience or before coming to college, that were helpful to you and your family as you kind of navigated everything?
Well, since I've been at UA, ODS has been huge for me. So I had to go request accommodations before I went to college, and that actually made me feel a lot more comfortable coming into the college environment. My school growing up was always very small, so my mom and I would just go up to school and kind of explain to the teacher what my life was like and explain what symptoms of high or low blood sugars looked like, and I felt a little bit nervous or uncomfortable doing that for a teacher that I'd never met before and in a class where, you know, we may have 200 students.
Sure.
So ODS kind of was the facilitator of that for me. I went and talked to them and just made sure that they had everything in my letters I needed, such as having food and drinks in class and being able to be excused if I was having an issue with my blood sugar. And that just made me feel so much better about transitioning. And then if you don't even want to have the conversation with your teacher, which I chose to do that because I wanted them to kind of understand what my life looked like. But even if you don't want to disclose any of that information, ODS just gives you the letter, you give it to your teacher, you don't even have to tell them what's going on, and it's a guideline that they have to follow through with.
Yeah, and for our listeners that may not know, ODS stands for Office of Disability Services. Mm-hmm. So if you are wanting to look into those accommodations yourself, just wanted to point that out. But that's fantastic that you were able to use that resource. Brian, anything for you?
Yes, I think the most impactful service I got was the summer camps I went to when I was a lot younger. I went 3 years and got to learn, like, how to manage my diabetes and, like, get to see other people that was like me. You know, when you first start out and it's like a condition, you kind of feel like you're off on an island away from everybody else because they don't have the same problems that you deal with. So it's really helpful, especially in their self-esteem at an early age, mm-hmm. to go to those kind of camps, learn how to manage it and see other kids. And unfortunately, I haven't signed up for ODS. I guess I'm going rogue over here.
Yeah. But hey, could, you know, take it next level with everything. So yeah.
I kind of just keep glucose tablets in my backpack just in case if I have a low in class, or, you know, try to keep better control of my blood sugar so I'm not, like, having a low in class.
Sure.
But besides that, it's pretty good at programs out there to help people like us.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, since we're getting close to the end of our segment here, I'm going to speed hit you with a couple questions. Just some things I wanted to personally, when Sheena told me this was going to be our topic for this week, I had some ideas of some questions that immediately came to mind. You've already answered one, I think. If I were going to ask you, comparing yourself to the average college student, do you feel like you're more aware of your long-term health than, you know, because of your condition? It sounds like than most average students, you probably pay a lot more attention to your health.
Yes, absolutely. You have to be more prepared than the average college student because you just never know when you're going to have a high or low blood sugar. I mean, you can plan all you want to, but sometimes your body is just, I mean, it's not a math problem. It's not a machine. Sometimes things are going to happen. So you have to be prepared and you have to realize that things can happen. So I think a lot of college students don't realize that because they haven't dealt with any kind of chronic condition or anything that serious growing up.
Mm-hmm. Something to me as simple as so many people exercise for their immediate benefits. Mm-hmm. I mean, that, you know, I want to lose a little weight. I want to look better here. I want to look better there. When you guys go to exercise, you probably have a slightly different mindset of, you know, a longer term.
Mm-hmm.
Just to stay healthy in the long term, because we have to deal with stuff like we could lose our limbs one day if we don't manage our blood sugar, and we can have cardiovascular disease. Our eyes can go out. Like, we have a lot more stuff to look out for than the average person does. So we kind of have to keep a better check on it than I would think most other college kids would.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just we appreciate the fact that the two of you, you know, were able to share your experiences. I think, you know, sometimes when we're on campus, we're not aware of a circumstance that somebody is going through. And also for our listeners who may be managing a chronic condition, just to, like you were saying, Brian, sometimes you feel so isolated and you're alone on an island. So the fact that you guys shared your experiences today, talked about resources that worked for you, we think is really fantastic. And, you know, we're going to get to continue the show on this topic, but we'll have our other fabulous guests with us. But we've got to say goodbye to you guys. So, Brian and Alicia, thank you guys for being with us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks for having
us.
Yeah,
of course. Well, I guess, John, we got to take another break. Keep trekking with us on this Sunday afternoon. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hey, I'm Paul Feinbaum, my favorite station in the world, 90.7 The Capstone.
Back. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John. And if you are just joining us this afternoon, we have had a fantastic discussion with our guest this afternoon, specifically talking about managing chronic conditions while in college. And earlier we had the chance to talk to Brian and Alicia as they share their experiences with type 1 diabetes. And now we're going to get to talk to our other guest. Her name is Darby McQueen. She's actually president of a student organization called Zebras. And I'm going to hand it over to her to tell a little bit about herself and the Zebras organization.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course.
My name is Darby McQueen. I'm a senior here studying social work and with an emphasis in public policy administration. Zebras was actually started last year. Mm-hmm. And some people may know this if they're familiar with the medical field, but Zebras is a term used to explain chronic illnesses that are rare. So especially with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So the saying is kind of like, if you hear hooves, don't always think it's a horse. And so that's kind of where the Zebras comes in. Anyways, I created Zebras last year because one of the things I found was that, you know, I have my friend groups and I have my church groups and whatnot, but I didn't necessarily have a group of people that had chronic illnesses that I could really relate to.
Sure.
And also just in regards to advocacy work on campus too. So this group was created with some of my friends, and all the officers actually have chronic illnesses as well. And so we just kind of build a community and also just work on advocacy on campus.
That's amazing. How many members do you guys have right now?
I think that last time I checked on the source, we're at 18.
That's wonderful.
But I know we have a few more that are wanting to join. We just haven't had our first meeting this semester.
Sure.
And that's kind of how chronic illnesses
is. Yeah, I understand how. I understand that. Yeah.
Well, Darby, can you tell us a little bit about your diagnoses and, you know, at what age you were diagnosed with each of your conditions that you're dealing with?
Yeah, so I have POTS, which is a shorthand for postural orthostatic tachycardia syndrome, and that is also paired with neurocardiogenic syncope. Mm-hmm. These are both dysfunctions of the autonomic nervous system. So if you ever have seen videos of fainting goats, that's kind of what I look like, in all honesty. Luckily, I've been taking medication and that helps, but that's kind of those conditions. The other two, Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, is a genetic disorder, and there's six types, and I actually have type 4, which is hypermobility. So my connective tissue is a little too flexible. So I could basically be a contortionist, but I'm not that cool. And then the other one is mast cell activation syndrome. And your mast cells are, that's my understanding, is a specialized white blood cell, and they kind of contribute to allergic reactions. And so if you have an activation syndrome, they get activated inappropriately, mm-hmm. and it can cause you to go into anaphylaxis. I actually am believed, so Ehlers-Danlos, I've definitely have had my whole life. It's a genetic mutation. But the rest of them, however, I have believed to have had my whole life, but I actually did not get diagnosed with them until I was 21.
Okay.
So I had to learn how to just kind of deal with them. And, luckily or unluckily, my POTS and NCS actually progressed in a negative manner. And so I was passing out multiple times a day. And that's mm-hmm. what led me to getting diagnosed finally.
Sure, sure. And, you know, just thinking about the fact that those conditions, you know, your awareness of them came about while you were in college. How do you feel like that impacted you in terms of your college experience, going from what you had considered yourself to be a quote-unquote normal college student to all of a sudden being like, oh, hey, like I have all of these things that I now need to self-manage.
Yeah. Part of me was really relieved, in all honesty, because growing up, I know Alicia in the last segment was talking about this, that she went to smaller schools, so her mom and her would go up and talk to the teachers. And sometimes my teachers weren't very understanding because I didn't have a diagnosis. I could literally pass out in front of them sometimes, and they were like, okay, like get back up, you know. Mm-hmm. So I learned how to do that. So there was a part of me that was relieved. Part of it, though, was kind of, I don't want to say depressing, but negative, was that I went from, like you said, kind of a quote unquote normal person to actually being considered disabled. So I actually do have like a handicap pass and everything, mm-hmm. and going through the process of registering with the ODS, and they do great work, and I'm glad that I have that. So I'm glad I have these places and groups that can help me and everything, accommodations.
Right.
But it was difficult because my whole life I just kind of considered myself like a, I don't know, like kind of weak, sick person. And now it's like, oh, like I actually have conditions.
Sure, sure.
Well, you mentioned the Office of Disability Services, mm-hmm. Just as they had mentioned earlier. Aside from that, and you mentioned it in a different context, you know, instead of, as they were talking about, you know, passing along information to teachers, you know, you having to make different arrangements for different things like that. Have there been other services? I mean, the starting the Zebras organization is a great thing in and of itself, I think. But what other resources are out there that you've used, or has there been a lack of resources for you?
Unfortunately, I would say there's been a lack of resources. I have frequent flyer miles at the Student Health Center. So,
really?
And I actually have met some doctors there that are really knowledgeable about those conditions, mm-hmm. which is great because some of them are definitely more on the rare side. And so that's been really good to have doctors that actually really understand what they are. But unfortunately for me, I actually had to go all the way to Vanderbilt to get diagnosed and treated, because just, I guess maybe it's with my specific conditions, or, and I guess maybe it's this way with a lot of more rare illnesses, but there was definitely a lack of resources, not just at the University of Alabama, but just kind of statewide.
Sure, sure. And, you know, Darby, we were talking actually even before the show had started, and I had mentioned to you that my coworker, Charlotte, who serves as the advisor for Zebras, you know, we were, had been talking about you, and she had talked about all of the things that you have such a strong belief in terms of advocacy. And one thing that she had mentioned was your high interest in accessibility for students, and especially as it relates to athletic events. Can you kind of tell us a little bit about that, or, you know, where you've seen through Zebras, you know, some improvements, or what you would love to see, even just college to college, you know, facilities to be more mindful of?
Yeah, actually, I've been working really closely to Chris Desposito. He's the director of transportation services. Mm-hmm. And so Zebras, we actually go out every once in a while and just kind of look for places that maybe aren't as accessible as they should be. So, for example, actually over by the FERG, where that there's that small handicap parking spot mm-hmm. close to Hauser. For a while, the concrete was so cracked and everything. I actually had a friend who got ejected from her wheelchair there one time. And so they were able to fix that. But the thing is, there were multiple places on campus.
Right.
And Chris has done a really great job of listening to those concerns and, I mean, getting it done.
Right.
And so that's like some things that I know Zebras have done. And one thing we've been working on in regards to sports, actually, is that I know that there's been issues with handicapped seating at the stadium during football games.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I've been trying to approach as delicately as I can, but also get my point across. I have found out that so sometimes if they kind of overbook handicap seating in the non-student section, mm-hmm. then they bring them over to our section. And so if you have all of the adaptive athletics teams there, or we'll just say even the tennis team, which I have some good friends on that, we have to, like, there's not enough seats for all of them. And not even enough places for all of their wheelchairs. And so we have to switch out who gets to sit in handicap during the games and everything. And so that can be kind of disheartening because we're such a big sports school, and especially football. And they tell us, you know, play for four, stay for four. But, you know, if you can't stand the entirety of the game, which the student section, all they do is stand. Mm-hmm. Personally, you know, after a busy day at school or even busy week at school, I think you want to sit. But, you know, everyone
right.
is standing. And if you can't stand that long, or maybe you just are not able to stand at all, that's just kind of sad because you have to miss out on a really big part of the University of Alabama legacy.
Right. No, I mean, that's so eye-opening to me. And I appreciate hearing that. Just even last week, having gotten to work with some of our wheelchair tennis athletes, doing some things with them with sports nutrition. So, you know, when you just think about how it's like this ripple effect in terms of how things are affected.
And, you know, it's it seems like you've had like some really great ideas. I mean, or you've noticed some things really quickly and been able to get some change really quickly with some of the things with people like Chris helping, things like that. And I'm sure there are probably some other, do you have your eyes on other resources on campus that you just haven't hit up yet or you're looking to?
Yeah, actually, so I'm a senator for the School of Social Work through Student Government Association.
Uh-huh.
And SGA, I think, actually is a really good resource, too. I'm actually working on a piece of legislation right now to maybe try to give a little bit more power to ODS say-so, because that's been an issue, too, that a lot of students have had with chronic illnesses, where you go into the professor, they get their letter signed and everything, and then they don't really respect it.
Right.
And so just trying to work on that. So that's one resource that I'm trying to work with.
Okay. Well, it's just awesome what you're doing. And you can come back for another 10-minute segment with us, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we got to take a quick break for just a few minutes, but we'll be right back and talk to you a little bit more on the other side of the break, some more about your condition. But we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.
Hi, this is Eli Gold, the voice of the Crimson Tide, and I love 90.7 The Capstone.
Welcome back to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. I want to thank you for joining us this Sunday afternoon as we close out the show with our last big segment here, and who has been a great guest so far this afternoon.
Yes.
I tell you, Dart, and by far, in 3 years of doing this radio show, Darby, I'm going to tell you, in my opinion, you have the most high-profile name that we could go with. I mean, you have like it's a movie star name.
I was just going to say that. I was like, can we just talk about your last name for a second? And, I mean, just Darby McQueen. I don't know. And that's just, yeah.
I get that a lot, actually.
Yeah, I was waiting for like a superhero to walk in here or something like that.
I wish. That
Darby
cool.
McQueen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, I don't know, just you know, like your old like Hollywood movies. Like, you know, I don't know. Just, yeah.
If I was thinking about changing my name to Darby McQueen.
You could.
I don't know if there's going to be two of us.
Yeah. Okay. Now we'll go back to more legit questions now. And, you know, Darby, I know we mentioned a little bit about this during the break, but, you know, when you think about your day-to-day life and just time spent with just managing being a college student and obligations and everything else, how much time do you feel like is spent or a percentage of your day is spent even just managing and planning around your conditions?
I think at the beginning of my diagnosis, I probably did a lot more planning in regards to that. And one of the things I actually really learned with mine is that there's definitely things you can do, like with POTS, you want to try to stop things that are going to cause tachycardic problems. So, you know, like no caffeine, for example. But for the most part, mine are almost kind of spontaneous, I feel like. And I think that has a lot to do with the autonomic nervous system aspect. So I actually would say I probably don't do too much during the day, because I think it frustrated me more because I was learning the hard way that I was trying to control things that couldn't really be controlled.
Sure, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I didn't know, just kind of, you know, based on the combination of your conditions, if you've ever had any of your healthcare providers that had talked about any lifestyle behaviors that would manage, or like you said, it's going to do its own thing. Like, you can take your medications, but it's not necessarily that some very magical diet is just going to cure everything, and, you know.
Yeah. So with mast cell activation syndrome, there is a diet. It's called the low histamine diet. And so I have actually started that recently. Unfortunately, at this time, it doesn't really seem to be helping me too much. But they said to just kind of keep with it and everything. Luckily, that's pretty easy because I basically just stay away from the things that I know seem to aggravate it more.
Sure, sure.
And then other than that, really, like I said, just trying to keep episodes or things that could cause tachycardia down. And I know with the Ehlers-Danlos, my joints dislocate a lot. And so I shouldn't be doing any like extreme sports or anything.
Sure, sure.
Right. Do you have to, even as your condition is managed now in your current state, do you still have pretty regular episodes?
Yeah, actually, I'm actually in a flare right now with my POTS. And so I actually just had to increase my beta blocker because my resting heart rate was like in the 100, 110s for several weeks, and my heart rate was getting up into the 180s, 190s upon standing. And so I have had to kind of switch some things. And actually this week, this is like the first outing I've had like all week because I've just been kind of resting. So,
Well, we're glad that we're able to give a comfortable experience where, you know, and just to be able to come out and advocate and, you know, share your experience, share Zebras as well.
Yeah.
Would you, kind of going along with this, you know, still having to deal with this and make adjustments like you do, how stressful would you say that? I mean, being a college student by itself is stressful, you know, and having to deal with this by itself would be stressful. But having to deal with a diagnosis while you're at college and deal with this together, how much stress do you deal with on a daily basis?
Honestly, a lot.
I
think one of the biggest things I've learned is, so first of all, my parents were really big into like, you know, you just got to keep pushing forward. You got to take it to home base and everything. And so that mindset has really helped me in that, you know, like you need to know when to like slow down, but you never really stop. Mm-hmm. I think one of the biggest things that helps with my stress though, is me not comparing myself to other people. Cause you know, the saying that there's always someone that has it better and always someone that has it worse. Not very fond of that saying because there are times, and even though it may be incorrect, you actually do feel like you have it the worst. Mm-hmm. And so what I found, you know, being on campus with relatively healthy people, just not comparing myself to my friends who are able to go and, you know, party until 3 o'clock in the morning and then go to an 8 a.m. because I can't do that. And so just kind of keeping myself focused on my lane.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, Darby, just thinking about, you know, of course, with the Zebras organization, I feel like that has just opened up such an opportunity for students to have that that ability to connect and provide social support. If you were to give advice to a student that was coming onto campus for the first time, starting college, and they're, you know, knowing that they're going to have to do some self-management of their conditions, what would your piece of advice be to them if they had some reservations about everything?
Yeah, I would definitely tell them to register with the Office of Disability Services. Like I said earlier, sometimes you get professors that don't respect it, but ODS really does a good job of trying to work with that and everything. And it's just always better, in my opinion, to have that safety net. And in addition to that, I would just tell them to get involved. Like even if it's not with Zebras, just get involved, because I know a lot of students will come, even that don't have chronic illnesses, and they, you know, start getting homesick, and especially if you're out of state and everything. And I've seen some people like from freshman year that aren't here anymore because they just kind of got depressed by everything. And so I think with chronic illnesses, that's even more likely to happen. And so just get involved, and you know, don't push yourself to a breaking point, but just like I said, just keep moving forward.
Yeah. It sounds like just having that social connection piece and feeling like you've got that social support. And again, just as Brian was saying in the earlier segments, it's so easy to feel isolated in our yeah. situation. So, so I love your takeaways with that for sure.
And what I love is how you've taken something that could have been potentially a negative situation for so many people, and something that could be probably potentially frustrating for you, and you're trying to make a positive for a lot of other people.
Well,
and,
thank you.
You know, seeing what you've done with the Zebras and all of that, along with, you know, you still have some time here left. You got a few months left to make even more of a difference. And I would say just leaving the legacy behind of helping others is huge. I don't know what your plans are after college, but, you know, being able to say that you've come to University of Alabama and taking something that could have potentially had a negative impact on your life, and you turn it around and, you know, make a positive impact for not just yourself, but many other people, I think is huge.
Yeah. And, you know, Darby, I believe you mentioned earlier being in the social work field, do you feel like your experiences have now shaped what you'd like to do professionally in terms of social work?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. I'm actually adopted too, so that all kind of ties into the social work field. I think one of the biggest things that I have learned and kind of has given me direction in regards to what, you know, aspect of social work is the policy side, because what I've learned is sometimes like just going back to like the ODS letters, like we can have all these great things and like these great policies, but sometimes if there's just like, you know, one thing that needs to be tweaked, you know, until then it can kind of mess up, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, policies become a really big thing for me. Like, I don't know why, but I absolutely love it. But I found that if you can fix that, a lot of times you can fix the other problems.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's awesome. I don't know about you, John. Like, I've just been so humbled by our guests that we've been able to have today, because it's clear that you have a passion for advocacy and making sure that students don't feel like they're alone. And really, this has just been a wonderful time of showcasing a lot of the campus partners that we have that have been able to serve our student population in a lot of different capacities.
Yeah. To get involved with Zebras real quickly, what's the next step?
What would you do, Darby?
We actually have a Facebook page. Okay. So it's like literally just called like the University of Alabama Zebras, or they can find us on the source, or they can email me, but it's DK McQueen, and then, you know, the whole at crimson.ua.edu. Uh-huh. Right. But there's plenty of ways, and I try to, you know, post everything on Facebook and everything. And ODS actually has our information too.
Okay, perfect. One thing I'll do a shout out, because I forgot when Alicia and Brian are here, but for the student organization that's specific to those with type 1 and type 2 diabetes, there is a chapter of the College Diabetes Network that is here on campus, and they are also able to be found through the source website. So we just want to make sure that we shouted out some resources. But John, we got one more little segment.
Yeah, me.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, Darby, thank you so much for this afternoon. You guys, stick with us. One last segment. You are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. Welcome back. If you have been listening today, then you know that you are listening to Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone. We've had a really awesome show this afternoon, John. I mean, I feel like a broken record, but I've been really taken aback by the guests that we've had this afternoon.
Yeah, I have to say that I've been impressed. Well, all three of our guests were great, Alicia, Brian, and Darby. And I don't know if I got to say it with Alicia and Brian when they were on here, but, you know, obviously with Darby too. It's just so impressive to see, you know, them come from high school and, you know, just out of high school and have to deal with something that, regardless of what age you are, is so impactful on your life. I mean, it has to be.
Oh, sure. And I think, you know, even just within the division that you and I work in of student life, you know, sometimes we're interacting with students and we think like, wow, like, you're really living on your own. Like, were you ready for this? You know, we're still just trying to make sure you're getting to class on time. So the fact that, you know, these students are going above and beyond, and they're having to because it means life or death for them, I think is just a huge piece. And to be able to hear their stories today was great.
Yeah, you know, Brian talking about, you know, having to manage his supplies and you know, make sure that he has enough. You know, that those sorts of things are real.
Right.
I mean, that's not just talking about theory and, you know, how difficult it is to get through a situation. That's really getting through life.
Oh, sure. Yeah, because when you think about surveying college students and then you know, we'll have them rank all the different aspects of their stress in college, you know, typically it's not going to be how am I going to pay for my medications and, you know, what time to take them or anything else. It's usually going to be academic or relationships or, you know, financial or whatever else. There's not necessarily going to be that medication piece that's involved.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I have to be honest with you. When we first started the show and coming into the show, I knew it was going to be an interesting topic for both of us because, it's an interest area for both of us. But to me, it ended up being more inspirational than – I mean, obviously it was interesting too, and I wanted to hear some of the things that they had to deal with. But just being able to see, you know, they didn't let it slow them down. I mean, all three of the ones that we talked to, you know, they're going past that and they're helping other people. That's just impressive.
Oh, yeah. Just, you know, knowing their level of involvement on campus, I think, is huge. And just the fact that they, just like any other college student, they have very aggressive goals and dreams of what they want to do with their career. So,
right.
And I think, you know, a big thing when it comes to our chronic conditions is that that doesn't mean that that has to be our identity. Like, sure,
right.
that's, you know, that's a, you know, a chapter, or, you know, part of the storyline, but that's not necessarily the title of our book or, you
right.
know, or a complete label on us. And so I think that these students were just a true testament to that, just as far as, you know, talking about their experiences. And of course, for Alicia and Brian, it started in childhood, and it was, you know, cool to hear from Darby because she had that flip side where we're going to have students that may become aware of those conditions when
while they're here,
in the middle of college, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it's just, to me, it's almost the opposite of they're not being managed by their conditions.
Right.
They're when you say managing a condition, they're not depending on somebody else to manage mm-hmm. it for them. You know, all three of those guys are managing a condition. And if you happen to be out there and you're struggling with something like that, the resources that they mentioned that are available to you. You know, the Office of Disability Services has got to be probably the best place to start.
Right.
And in terms of putting you with other, you know, resources around campus. But there are resources around campus. And as Darby has pointed out, if there are, the resources aren't available, we can make them available.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
People are willing to listen. And, you know, we just sometimes I think, you know, unfortunately, we don't know where we're lacking. And it takes those vocal students, vocal faculty members, vocal, you know, visitors to our campus to help us realize what we may need to improve on. So I applaud them for all for that.
Absolutely.
For sure. But
good work.
I guess. End of another show, man.
I know.
You know, it's a good Sunday afternoon. Hopefully, after you guys listen to us, it'll be nap time. Not that we made you sleepy. Just, you know, it's just a little Sunday afternoon, a little tiredness happening. But you guys, just have a fabulous week, and we will catch you next week on Fit to Be Tied with Sheena and John on 90.7 The Capstone.